predominantly white.
Exponentially.
You're gonna have to do the remix on that for Vienna. Predominantly.
For tuning in to The Queer Truth, a podcast that takes on a variety of topics, from pop culture to everyday life. I am Chantel C., you can call me Cece, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, Denise. Hi, Denise.
Hi.
This is exciting. We're recording our pilot podcast, and this one is going to be a doozy. I don't know where to begin, but this first segment, we will always choose some things happening in pop culture to discuss perhaps deeper themes. I have to start with the top 10 hip hop list that Billboard put out. It came out this week. There was a lot of discussion on it. Snoop was quick and loud to discredit the list because it doesn't include Tupac. Obviously, that's why I was upset. And his arch enemy, Biggie, is listed as number one.
Well, I mean, I think it's just like ignoring a whole lot of West Coast niceness, right? So it's not including Tupac, but it's also, they're missing a lot of people. It's not including Ice Cube. I don't know. It's missing a lot of people that might have been noteworthy. And there's some questionable people from the East Coast that they decided to put on. So the fact that they just totally thumbed their nose up at the West Coast, that's kind of like, well, okay, what's that about? But Eminem number three. That, you know, and I'm going to say things here that are going to make people really upset. But, you know, when they said Notorious B.I.G. number one, I just said, okay, you know, I'm done.
Right.
This list is, I can't fuck with this list at all. And I think that people say that because, you know, he put out an album, The Set Ready to Die, and then he died. I mean, like, that's amazing.
Okay, Tupac put out an album.
Right.
Put out a whole video about his death.
Oh, God. But no, he's just not, no, he's not number one by any means. And this is from someone who grew up in New York City. I feel like he's got a lot of talent. But he was kind of like a one-trick pony in the fact that what he was talking about. And he had a very short career relative to a lot of rappers. So we don't even know if he had staying power, to be quite honest.
Right.
But I think that, you know, his death put him in this kind of like legendary status. And then that was the end of that.
But then the only woman on the list.
Lauryn Hill.
Lauryn Hill. Don't get me wrong. I love the old Lauryn Hill. But the only woman on the hip hop list?
Who arguably only has 1.5 hip hop albums, right? Because her solo album is like half hip hop.
It's half hip hop.
Half R&B, half hip hop.
Right.
And then the albums of the Fugees are a pretty solid hip hop album. But yeah.
But how much time should we even, or how much?
They had Lil Wayne on there.
How much value should we attribute to a list put out by Billboard? I mean, obviously, it's hard to make an objective list. Everyone has an opinion. But is this list to be taken seriously coming from Billboard? Do they have any credibility?
Well, yes, anything to be taken seriously coming from Billboard, right? Like, how does Eminem even get on this list? How does he get on this list?
Sales.
Right. So this is, you know, if they're only looking at sales, then, you know, they can't be looking at anything for real, for real. So, yeah, I'm done with this list.
Okay.
I don't know what else to say about this. Andre 3000 looks like a leprechaun gremlin.
Look, you're not going to hate on Andre, okay? Andre 3000 is amazing. What they were doing with hip-hop at that time, first of all, they put the South on the map in a different way.
Wow.
I think I'm very happy with Andre 3000 being on there. So, if you're done with the list, I have a question. What did you think when you saw Obama this week
talk about
popping off?
Well, that was clearly unscripted.
Clearly unscripted.
I'm glad that he used that language in particular because I think it's language that is so specific to what's been happening with the Republican nominees right now. So, yeah, I mean, I thought it was absolutely, you know, as a very smart brother said, one of the blackest things that happened that week, right, was Obama talking about people popping off. But I also agree with what Sana Baldwin wrote about how, you know, people need to keep in check that, you know, this is also someone who authorizes the bombing of so many brown and black lands. And we need to keep it in perspective, because I think what Trump has proven so successfully is that the presidency, to a certain extent, is this massive X factor. It's a reality TV show. And the way that people have really courted voters in the past has been through aesthetics, has been through being likable. People wanted to go get a beer with W, right? So that's how he got the election, even though he was dumb as a doormat.
Well, I agree with some of that, but I don't agree with Son of Baldwin, because I felt like, one, he is, as he often is, super self-righteous. Like, I feel like he doesn't give credit to people being multidimensional beings. It is absolutely okay for me to say, oh, Obama showing his ethnicity for once when he gets unscripted. That's one thing. That doesn't mean that I've forgotten anything. And he writes, you know, all we need is a shuck and a jive and we're happy. I don't think anyone said that they were happy about the bombings of black and brown bodies. What people said was they were happy to see their black president being black. I think that's two different things.
He is black, though. He doesn't need to say popping off to be black, right?
Well, but the criticism is...
But my criticism, which is a bit different than what Sana Baldwin is that, you know, people were saying that Clinton was the first black president for playing sax and fucking people around in the White House. And yeah, I mean, like, just... I mean, really, at the end of the day, you know, what is blackness? And there's this performatory blackness that people do to win votes and win hearts and minds that has nothing to do with the lived lives of their constituency and sort of seduces people to vote against their best interests. Why on earth, you know, I'm about to go on a rant on why on earth anybody would be thinking about who would be black, especially who's not massively rich, thinking about voting about for Hillary Clinton.
Okay, well, we're not talking about the election. We're not talking about the election. I just feel like it's wrong to reduce people's reaction to their, you know, reduce people's excitement about Obama saying popping off to their being ignorant or willingly blind to what's going on in the world. I don't think that's the case.
Right, but what we know is that their reaction to that actually has consequence.
Of course.
Their reaction to that has consequence in the polls. If you're looking at that demographic that right. is somehow impressed by Obama saying popping off, mm-hmm. they're willing to now look at him in a little bit more favorable light mm-hmm. because of it.
Of course. Well, moving on to our second segment, which will allow us to talk about things not necessarily of more substance, but definitely of a more existential substance. I wanted to talk this week about what we've seen happening at universities and colleges across the U.S. Probably most prominent is what happened at Mizzou, which was successful in protesting nonviolently, as some people liked to emphasize, which led to the president of the university resigning. Protests began actually earlier in the year, what a lot of people might not realize, and they were led initially by Jonathan Butler, a black male student at the college, and if I'm not mistaken, also openly gay. And Jonathan experienced quite a bit of personal abuse and because of, due to his race and his sexuality, and eventually went on a hunger strike and had a list of demands for the university. Most people would say that this didn't really gain traction until the football team also protested. And the football team, which is something like 60%+ African-American, mm-hmm. the blacks of the football team posted in a picture with the entire football team, including the coaches, saying that if the president didn't resign, they would discontinue playing for the rest of the season, which is huge because there's livelihood at stake. These are people who have an extremely rigid schedule, don't have any freedom in the way they live their lives during football season. And probably the majority, the reason that they're at the university is due to their college football career. So it was a big step. I wouldn't say anything against that. But what is this? What are we seeing? What's happening right now? The president at Claremont McKenna has also resigned.
Good. She was a mess. Girl, she was a mess. She said she was the one that was talking about students that don't fit the mold.
Yes.
She said, oh, you know, the students of color sent her something saying, look, life for us has been hard here. And she was like, yeah, you know, we also need to take into account something in the effect of we need to take into account how it is for students that do not fit the mold. And they were like, you got to go.
Right.
And then she had to go.
And she left.
Mm-hmm. But that wasn't even her only misstep.
No.
Because you can't even reduce it to that particular faux pas of language. I mean, she was anybody that would put that to paper. Like, this isn't something that she said.
Said, right.
Right? She put that on paper, and then she probably showed it to somebody. Mm-hmm. It was like, this all right? All right, this all right. And then she sent it out. I mean, that's ridiculous. She got
to
go.
She has to go. But we see it happening at Vanderbilt, at Yale. Mm. I was particularly annoyed with some of my white liberal acquaintances who said that Mizzou has set a precedent and there's no turning back. What does this mean now if football players can just protest and demand the head of someone who doesn't have any responsibility about the mistakes of a small few who may not even be students at the university?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, people are upset anytime black people get any kind of equality in general, right? So if you're looking at the privileged, anytime there are any gains from the marginalized population for equality, then the privileged will say that they are somehow taking over the world or something like that. And that's what's happening right now. You have students, if they had missed the football players at Mizzou. It's very confusing. Missouri University, right? University of Missouri.
Right.
If they had missed that game, it would have cost the university over $1 million.
Right.
Right? $1 million. They pay these these football players in like Target credits or something. I don't know. Right? Like, you could get some library books and...
Oh, stop.
They don't get paid is what I'm saying.
Right.
And they cannot form a union because they're not athletes. They're student athletes. And so their labor is exploited. Many of them come from very poor households.
Exactly.
And they have to spend the next 4 years pretending they're allowed to study while getting on the football field 30 to 40 hours a week.
Right.
So they have to pretend that they can somehow get a real college degree and do some real academic achievement within that time. So this is the one way that they can exert any kind of power over that situation. And they've chosen to exert that power. I'm so happy that they chose to do so.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, the backlash is just like people being exposed for actually being racist. That's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and what we know about whiteness is that what whiteness allows people to do isn't so much just have privilege. Having privilege is one piece of whiteness. What whiteness allows you to do is to have privilege and to partake either directly or indirectly in the oppression of other people and then remain innocent. That's what whiteness allows you to do, right? Like, I could never go outside and like kick a bum in the face and then be like, that wasn't me. But white people could do that, mm-hmm. right? Like, that's what whiteness allows them to do.
Mm-hmm.
So on a societal scale, right? I mean, and then... But I'm really glad that this is happening throughout. I'm glad that it's caught on. I'm glad that there's a template for it. And that's what's really scary. Black Lives Matter is scary because it provides a template for easy, fast, accessible growth in other parts of the world and the country. So,
and so what do we, if we're looking towards the greater vision, what does it mean that, you know, Ivy League schools, SEC football schools, Southern schools, West Coast schools are being called out in a way that most people can't really find fault with, because it is nonviolent, as people like to criticize other movements that haven't been. It's nonviolent. They have the support of faculty. They have the support of the wider student body. What does it mean? What can they do? What is important now? So, you know, presidents have resigned. What has to happen to keep it moving? Where can we look for the accountability to make sure that it wasn't just, you know, a publicity stunt, that the president resigns and then everyone is appeased and then we move on?
Sure. I think that the students have been really good at making sure that it has accountability by listing their demands in very clear fashion. There's actually a website that lists the demands of all of the different schools. I think it's like thedemands.org.
Okay.
And it will tell you the demands of every single black affiliated organization that has risen up at the universities because of what has happened at Mizzou. I think what needs to happen now, what I heard was coming out of Mizzou, and I think that they've gone in the right direction, is that they were aligning themselves with the women's organization to see in which ways that marginalized group was also, that they could, you know, attach themselves with that. Right before this movement, if you're looking at what was happening on American college campuses, there was a movement against rape. It was a massive movement. Two other topics that are of massive issue on university campuses right now. One is the rise of adjunct professors. So the rise of professors that are being paid on a per course basis.
Right.
That some of them are paid so little that they're eligible for food stamps, even though they're working full time. Or eligible for a TANF, which is a temporary aid to needy families. And so you got that happening at the same times of this awareness about the sexual assault rates on campus, at the same time as the awareness of the marginalization, the oppression of Black lives on campus that happens in a systemic way. That's also associated with the fact that you've got buildings being named after rapists and after people that owned slaves and blatantly said Black people ain't shit. I mean, like, all of that has been happening for years and none of it is new. It's just that now there's more awareness. And what I would like to see, and what I think is starting to happen with Mizzou, is that all of these people link up and join forces and, you know, distill their things into a platform of really tangible demands. Because the fear that of what happens on university campuses is that there are students with fire, but they have a limited time on that campus. What universities try to do when there's a student that becomes a problem for them is they try to wait that student out. I know, I've been that student. And it's really hard for a student to balance all the things that they have to balance and then try to develop something with continuity when they're only seen as a stakeholder for 4 years, or for, in a lot of cases, these 2 more years, maybe 1 more year, right? Maybe 6 more months.
Mm-hmm.
So that being the case, like, trying to establish that continuity is going to be really key.
Well, what does it mean that someone like Jonathan Butler is at the head of a protest at Mizzou, where so often, you know, people speak quite loudly about homophobia in the Black community, but more and more of the movements are being led by Black queer people. Someone named DeRay Mekison, out Black man.
I think one of them, D-Ray.
I like to call him D-Ray, but I believe that I heard someone say it might be DeRay. I'm not sure. Maybe he can let us know.
I'm gonna need another shot. You get your D-Ray.
You know, but we have these people, you know, at the forefront of Black Lives Matter or Black queer women. Jonathan Butler is
Founders.
A Black gay man.
Right.
What does that mean? Does that have...
That's also happening at Yale. There's a lot of queerness at Yale.
So does that change something? Does that make the movement perhaps more inclusive in ways that it otherwise wouldn't be? Does that negate the long time stereotype of homophobia only being in the black community? Does it mean anything for these movements at all?
Well, this has always been the case. James Baldwin is queer. We know that. We know Bernard Rustin is queer. We know Audre Lorde is queer. We know that a lot of other people may have been of questionable straightness. In the traditional civil rights movement, what we know is the traditional civil rights movement. So the fact that there are black queer bodies at the forefront is not new. The fact that they are out as queer and are recognizable as queer at this moment in time is new. But Black Lives Matter and also the organizing that's happening in large scales throughout with university campuses is new in the fact that it's not built necessarily around personalities. It's mm-hmm. built as a very grassroots movement. So there is no Malcolm X, there is no Martin Luther King. You know, even people that are plugged in and have been following Black Lives Matter can't really name you a central the leader of Black Lives Matter. D-Ray is not the leader. Sean King's not the leader.
Surely not.
Even the women that founded it are not the leaders of it.
Right.
And that's the power of it. So that you don't have to sacrifice your life for the movement, so to speak. You don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not about you specifically. Now, in terms of this whole homophobia in the black community and all that nonsense, I think you know, that always was some overblown, crazy stuff that was fabricated in the wake of Prop 8 and the racist kind of backlash that happened out of Prop 8, which was the proposition in California that should happen. So it was always a myth and largely propagated by Dan Savage, who has since gone way back on that when he saw the numbers on it that did not support his racist view of what was actually happening within the black community. And all the studies show that black community is not any more homophobic than the public at large. So we've long since known that black people are not any more homophobic than white folks or anything like that. And this...
Well, you might want to give Lee Daniels that memo, because I don't know that he's seen it. But we're not going to go into that. I just had to throw shade.
There's
so many memos
that Lee Daniels has not gotten.
I just needed to throw that bit of shade, but we won't stick on that today.
But no, so many memos. I don't have the inkjet cartridges to give Lee Daniels the memos he needs to get. And shout out to Lee Daniels for calling out those people about the diversity of their screenwriters.
Right.
Right?
We'll give him that.
So he gets a couple memos, but, you know, there's so many he's missed. I don't even know if he's on the mail list. I'll tell you that. Lee has unsubscribed.
Give us a call, Lee. We'll help you out.
He's unsubscribed. What I know from history, because what I get out of history and what everybody get out of history, but what I get out of history is that when people are more marginalized within a group, then their consciousness is raised at different levels. And this has been talked about a lot in a lot of anti-racist workshops or what have you, that generally women have to know more about men. Black people have to know more about white people than white people have to know about black people. And if we take that logic further, we know that queer people have to know more about straight people than straight people have to know about queer people. We know that because their lives depend on it. So they're radicalized just by their very existence in a way that, you know, straight people are just not. So it doesn't surprise me at all that queer people are at the forefront of this movement.
So in our third segment, we like to talk about what's going on in the communities where we live. I am based in London and have ties to London and Berlin. And right now, I'm especially excited about the upcoming Fringe Film Fest, which is an annual film festival, a queer film festival that takes place in London over the course of, I think, just a weekend. And this coming Sunday, so the film Women in the World is being screened, and one of our beloved friends is in it, Bea Steadwell.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about women, as far as I can see, but I'm not sure because I haven't seen it yet. But from the trailer, it seems to be queer women of color who are spoken word artists and performers. And I'm especially looking forward to this film festival because while it's not explicitly intersectional, it is just a queer film festival. There seems to be a committee that puts it together that definitely takes in the accounts of people of color, black people, who are, of course, major parts of the queer community, but oftentimes, in my opinion, overlooked. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. Is there something going on in Vienna that the queer truth can be excited about?
Okay. See, you are prepared on a regular basis, and some people may not be as prepared. Vienna is not London.
But judging by your Instagram, you stay in the streets.
So, wow.
So you're always at something. Right. You know all of Black Vienna.
Wow, I don't know all of
you
Black
started
Vienna.
The group. It's called Black People in Vienna.
It's
so
called Black People in Vienna. And there's all 200 of us. It's 197 members unverified in Black People in Vienna. Now you coming from London, you trying to act like that's an impressive number.
That's pretty impressive for Vienna.
I got more Black people in my family. Like my immediate family, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's my cousins and me. Okay, so what's coming up? Ooh, there's the Sounds of Blackness Part 3. It's a bunch of amazing DJs that get together. And they'll be playing on December 4th. So that's exciting.
That is exciting. I think one of the other events that you went to is what introduced me to the Very Black Project. Because
yes.
Someone was wearing one of those shirts.
Right. That was another Sound of Blackness event. That was, I think, their second one. And I went to that. And it's good music. It's, you know, it's a dance night. A bunch of amazing DJs, people that love music. So that's exciting. I'm not going to be in town for that. But,
but if you're in Vienna.
I'm going to Germany.
If you're in Vienna.
Going to Germany. Yeah,
now you know.
Yeah. And what I am going to on December 1st, I think, is the Margaret Cho concert. You know that, right?
Yes, you told me that.
So, going to the Margaret Cho concert. Some people don't love Margaret Cho like I don't love Margaret Cho, but I'll pay my money and I'm going to that concert. So that's exciting. And Thanksgiving's coming up. And so a bunch of Black Americans get together and they do their thing. So that I'm excited for that. I'm really excited that MTV Decoded put out that Thanksgiving
yes.
Real Facts.
Yes, Cheska Lee, she gave it to us.
Uh-huh. Are you sure that's her name? Cheska?
Cheska Lee?
Her name Francesca. You just want to take the end of it?
I'm pretty sure. I read that it was Cheska Lee.
It's Cheska now?
It's Cheska Lee.
Wow. People get big and they change up.
Maybe.
Okay, because I thought it was Francesca. I knew her back when she was Francesca. But... So that's what's up. So that's exciting. But yeah, I mean, like, Vienna's a small town. You can't be doing this. You can't be doing the segment. I don't think we could do the segment in the future. Like, it was like, hey, so, you know, this is what's going on in New York City. Let's talk about what's going on in Madison, Wisconsin. It's just not fair.
It's not fair. People need to know that there are Black people all over the world. And we're doing our best to make things happen in all areas, even wow. those that are predominantly white.
Exponentially. You're going to have to do the remix on that for Vienna. Predominantly.
Well, yeah. We'll think about it. We'll see what the response is, and we'll go from there. Mm-hmm. But that's all for this week. Thank you so much for listening to our pilot. And if you would like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. Until next time, peace out.